When you combine radical political correctness with extreme government incompetence, you get the sad situation in America and the world today. We'll talk about it again this hour.
My name is Michelle Bachmann. I want to thank you for allowing me to be a part of this press conference. And I played a role in this story, and I was thrilled to be able to write the foreword for Phil and Art's book. This is a very important book. What Phil has told all of you is that he was on track to put very important information in front of law enforcement's face. Information that would allow them to crack the code, if you will, to understand and to be able to defeat networks here in the United States that wanted to bring about violent acts against American citizens or against American targets. And I think, again, it's important to underscore what was the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is the establishment of Islamic Sharia law around the world. That includes the United States. It is hard for us to understand or believe, growing up in the United States, that someone would seek to overthrow the United States Constitution and in its place, Sharia law, and force, even through violence, all people to have to follow. But that's exactly what the goal is. The fellow that committed the horrific acts on Sunday morning had that as his goal. The individuals who shot the 14 innocent people in San Bernardino had that as their goal.
This is Understanding the Times Radio with Jen Markell. This hour, last week's guest returns to continue part two of our discussion on the government's role in shutting down investigations into homegrown terror groups in the USA. Phil Haney is our guest again today with his new publication, If You See Something, Say Nothing. Phil Haney is a former Department of Homeland Security officer and intelligence expert. Prior to his retirement, Phil bravely tried to say something about the people and organizations that threatened the nation, but his intelligence information was eliminated by the very agency that assigned him to protect the country. Jen is joined again this week by co-host Eric Barger. Later in this broadcast, Jen and Eric will wrap up this two-week series we spent with author Phil Haney. Here with today's program, Jen Markell.
Welcome to the program. I am so glad you can join me. I hope you were able to tune in to last weekend's program where we spent the hour getting acquainted with author Philip Haney, because we've been talking about his brand new book, See Something, Say Nothing, A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. And some incredible information was given out last weekend. We encourage you to listen to it online, olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org, and get a CD of the two programs that we're doing. We won't be doing a full hour right now, but we're going to be covering a portion of this hour. Continuing, Eric Barger is back in studio with me again for this particular weekend. Eric, I wanted to throw it to you right away because it's so important, and that is the fact that the various agencies, and I believe it was 2011, had the various kinds of information purged from them, the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI. These agencies were literally purged, and you have reported on that on a number of occasions. Talk to us about it, and you got some of your information from Michelle Bachmann.
When she was then Congresswoman Bachmann, she gave me this letter, and it sent to me. It's a 7-page letter written to John Brennan, CIA director, and it comes from 57 different Muslim groups here in the United States, and it says, the undersigned Muslim, Arab, and South Asian organizations write regarding the federal government's use of biased, false, and highly offensive training materials about Muslims and Islam. Then it says, the seriousness of this issue cannot be overstated, and we request that the White House immediately create an interagency task force to address this problem with a fair and transparent mechanism and input from Muslims of the Arab and South Asian communities, including civil rights lawyers, etc., etc. That was sent to John Brennan. Here's what they wanted: a review of all the training materials and the trainers at government agencies, including the FBI and the FBI intranet, FBI library, the Department of Homeland Security. I'm looking through the list here just to pick out the high points, if you will. All of our military intranet libraries and training materials and experts, a purge of all federal government training materials and biased materials against Islam, implement a mandatory retraining program for FBI agents, U.S. Army officers, and all federal, state, and local law enforcement that have been subjected to bias training, to ensure that personal reviews are conducted to make sure it doesn't happen again, to implement quality controls to make sure it doesn't happen again, to issue guidance clearly that saying this is against the First Amendment to speak up against Islam. So they removed basically all mention of Islam, any quotes from the Quran, anything good that might have been said about Islam was taken out. This was sent to John Brennan. Now, the question is, how fast did that take place? The letter was written October 19th, 2011. How fast does our U.S. government work on anything? I can name road projects that go on for years and years and years and years and years, and you think they're never going to get done, and every time you drive by, you don't see anybody out there working at all. Well, that was October 19th, and that request was completed, and all of the training materials were expunged of any mention of Islam by the end of the year, less than 6 weeks later in 2011. There was a second letter that Phil's going to talk about that I think will really tie this together now.
Let me reset the stage for folks who may be joining us for the first time because they might have missed last weekend's program. And basically, Phil Haney has served in the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, from 2003 to 2015 when he retired. He tried to protect us. Our government did not. That is the sort of short form of his book, See Something, Say Nothing, A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. Why don't you respond to Eric's question and comment, Phil Haney?
The response came within 2 to 3 weeks. The letter that Eric is referring to was written on White House stationery by John Brennan, dated before the middle of November 2011. I can't remember the exact date, but he made it perfectly clear where the origin of these policies was, and that was from the White House, written on, again, White House stationery. He responded to the main author of that letter that was dated October from a coalition of 57 different civil rights and civil liberties groups and Islamic groups. And he's right about high speed, because normally the government doesn't do anything in terms of months or even years, but you're talking here hours and days. And he reiterated in his response letter specifically and emphatically that they intended to follow through with the requests and or demands that were outlined in that letter, the remarkable letter that was written in October of 2011. And one of the things that was so incredible about that letter was their audacious demand that not only do they purge material out of the training courses, but that they go through all of these different systems of information and purge everything out of them. And that still wasn't good enough, to actually literally take books off the shelves and purge them as well. Wow. But the most ominous thing about all of it was they insisted that the U.S. government turn and punish, literally punish, the personnel that were teaching those courses, and that they give mandatory retraining to anybody that had ever taken one of those courses in whatever branch of federal government service they were in. This is one of the most preposterous breaches of due process and constitutional protections, I think, perhaps in the history of our entire country. But they took it in stride and actually responded and complied with their demands. And, of course, individuals like myself that were still active duty, we got hit by the full force of these promises that they made to these Muslim groups. And that is why I call it the Year of the Great Purge in the book.
Year of the Great Purge. You can read about that in the book we're talking about.
You think about how the intranet itself was scrubbed, the FBI intranet. Just think what that might mean, of how many names that were out there and how many organizations and how many scenarios had been researched and had been investigated that are now, well, history or toast unless somebody somewhere has a copy of them. That's the thing that stuck out to me, was they wanted to scrub any mention, just like act like it never existed, that there was ever any investigation into Islam or anyone who might be an Islamist or planning an attack and so on. And yet I still see the little old ladies and the little kids getting patted down at the airport. Mm-hmm. And it just must be to make somebody feel better that It looks like we're doing something, because we miss the point when we allow this to take place and allow our leaders to basically be called on the carpet for what they have done by trying to follow the law and protect us.
This same purging process happened to me 2 full years before it metastasized into a broad-based policy. When they purged the information or ordered me to modify the information in the law enforcement system that we use called TECS, that was in October of 2009, mm-hmm. 2 full years before. And that wasn't enough for these Muslim Brotherhood front groups. They pressed on. They pushed themselves right into the middle of the administration and basically pounded their fist on the table and demanded, you remove all the rest of this information as well. And the administration did it to their utmost. Mm-hmm. To me, that's an ominous intrusion. Incredibly audacious for them to do this, but it's even more ominous that the government, the administration, actually complied with them.
I don't think they had to pound too hard, Phil. It would appear to me that this administration has been predisposed to give Islam just about what
right.
it wants.
Let's name some of the organizations, Phil and Eric, involved here, because we've got the Holy Land Foundation. We want to talk about that in just a minute. We've got CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations. We've got the Islamic Society of North America. We've got the Muslim Public Affairs Council. I'm sure there are others. But Phil Haney, and that's who I'm talking to for last weekend and a portion of this weekend, as he's author of the book See Something, Say Nothing, A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government Submission to Jihad. Talk to us a little bit about the Holy Land Foundation trial of 2008, because there really should have been no excuses after this trial of 2008.
Well, I'd really like to do my utmost to make a point here. I referred earlier to history. The Holy Land Foundation trial was a turning point in the history of counterterrorism in America. It's like the key putting into the lock on the door and was turned. The reason why is because the Holy Land Foundation trial remains to this very day the largest counterterrorism trial ever conducted in the history of America. It was prosecuted by the Department of Justice in Dallas, Texas. The culmination of the trial was indictments, guilty verdicts of 5 individuals mm-hmm. on, I believe it was 102 counts of support of Hamas. The amount of financial support varies depending on what report you use, somewhere between $12 and $60 million. Of direct financial support raised through zakat, which is the Arabic word for charity, among the network of mosques in the United States. All this money was funneled into the Holy Land Foundation, and from there, they sent the money directly to Hamas. That was phase one of the trial, specifically focused on the Muslim Brotherhood Network here in the United States. The intention was to carry on with phase two of the trial. And the groups that were most specifically mentioned as being included in Phase 2 were the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, the Islamic Society of North America, called ISNA, and the North American Islamic Trust, we call it NAIT. Those were the 3 macro Muslim organizations, front groups for the Muslim Brotherhood, that were originally intended to be part of the Phase 2 Holy Land Foundation trial. The important point to make here is that after November of 2008, the excuse that we didn't know no longer holds water. Mm-hmm. It also implies that every decision that was made in both domestic and foreign policy that included a component or recognized the participation of the Muslim Brotherhood was done deliberately and intentionally, despite the overwhelming evidence that was presented in a federal trial. and including the information that persons like me put into the system. Not just the information that was presented in the trial, which was irrefutable, but components of the law enforcement databases that people like me also put in. All of that was disregarded and has been up until this very moment today.
Phil, I want to head to another topic here, just in the interest of time. I still have a couple of important questions because I do think that listeners are sitting listening and asking themselves, you know, what can we do? We feel helpless when we hear information like this. Before I head there, let me ask you just for a few comments here on the Boston bombing at 2013. And you write about it in this book, and it's fascinating, and you bring out some very important points on the mysterious Saudi, and you feel he did have a tie in to the Boston bombing. Am I right?
Well, the way I characterize it, as an active duty law enforcement officer who had what we call a nexus, we use that term, nexus, which means connection to the case. The way I had a nexus to the Boston bombing is 4 years before the Boston bombing occurred, which was April 15th of 2013, literally 4 years before, I put a report into our system. I've already mentioned the name of it, TEX, with 118 linked individuals and organizations, of which a major organization, a hub of the whole network, was the Islamic Society of Boston. Now, the Islamic Society of Boston and its satellite mosque were the mosque that the Tsarnaev brothers attended. In the four-year period between when I put the records into the system and when the Boston bombing happened, not a single colleague in any of the law enforcement branches queried any of the records that I put in. Not one. And that might be somewhat understandable. But then what happened after the bombing was even more incredible. Not one single one of my colleagues in law enforcement in any of the other agencies queried the records related to the Boston Mosque after the bombing. And I was very curious, how could that have happened? Until the Imam of the Islamic Society of Boston gave a press conference in February of 2015. And in the process of the press conference, I think he may have not realized what he said. He told the reporters that if this was a radical mosque, then the DHS and the DOJ and other federal law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, if I remember correctly, if they thought that we were a radical mosque, they wouldn't have been conducting outreach programs with us for the last 4 years. And that's when it hit me. No wonder no one queried the records. They weren't investigating the Islamic Society of Boston, which has about 40 individuals and probably 15 or 20 organizations that have what we call derogatory information that are linked. They weren't conducting an investigation. They were doing dialogue and outreach.
I still want to go back to this mysterious Saudi, because you write about him, and you do feel there is a connection.
What happened was, I've never maintained, because I don't know specifically what his connection to the bombing was in specific terms, but what I do maintain and what got me in so much trouble is that there were records created on him immediately after, I'm talking minutes if not hours, after the bombing. He was considered, first, a subject of interest, second, a person of interest, and third, was going to be deported on terrorism charges. We called it 3B charges. Now fast forward 4 days later to when Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano testified in public on C-SPAN before Jeff Duncan, representative from South Carolina, who was the vice chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, House Committee, and emphatically insisted that there was no person of interest, there was no subject of interest, and there was no Saudi citizen who was ever going to be deported. And that is when the real crisis hit, because that's what I call the third bomb of the Boston bombing. And Janet Napolitano pulled the trigger on it, but it created what I call invisible shrapnel. And people like me who were standing right at the center of the case were badly damaged by it, because eventually that information that proved that what she said was not true ended up getting leaked to the media. I provided that information to the House Committee on Homeland Security because they asked me for it, because they already knew that what Janet Napolitano said to them was not factually correct. So now they needed the proof of it, and they asked me to provide it to them, and I did. Somehow it got leaked, and the Department of Justice came after me to indict me on criminal charges. They convened a grand jury, and they were fully intended to file criminal charges against me for leaking that information to the media, but it wasn't me. Ultimately, those charges were dropped. Before the whole course of investigation was finished, they took my gun, they canceled my secret clearance, they cut off access to all the programs in the system that I referred to earlier, including texts, and they sequestered me in a small office cubicle for the last 9 months of my career until all of these investigations, there were actually two others along with the DOJ, were finally concluded. And that is why it's so incredible that I was able to retire honorably.
Phil, we want to wrap this up in the next segment, and I think the audience is kind of blown away by some of the things you've shared. I think we need to talk to them about what they can do, which I think at this point they feel very helpless, and we don't want them to leave feeling that way. We really need to offer some encouragement and some sound advice, because if our government is not protecting us, obviously God is, but when his hand of restraint is removed from the country, it's a very, very perilous time. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks. Don't go away. We're going to wrap up with Phil Haney, author of See Something, Say Nothing.
Understanding the Times Radio is now offering CD recordings containing both Part 1 and Part 2 of our current two-week series with DHS whistleblower Phil Haney. To order both broadcasts with Phil Haney, just phone 763-559-4444. When you call, ask about a monthly subscription to receive every program we air twice a month. Again, to order, dial 763-559-4444. We like to connect with our listeners. The best way to do that is through our website at olivetreeviews.org. You'll find all the current and archived radio programs. You'll get details about our upcoming fall conference and much more. Again, log on to olivetreeviews.org. Thanks to all of you who've recently decided to support us monthly with your tax-deductible donations. Your financial gifts mean so much to us. It helps to keep this program coming to you on this radio station. Please write with your gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. In just a moment, we'll return to our conversation with Phil Haney.
Do you feel alone in a world going mad? A world where every day headlines are more and more troubling. I hear from so many who have no like-minded people with whom to share. Come and meet Remnant Believers Saturday, October 15th for a one-day Understanding the Times conference just outside Minneapolis, Minnesota. Let me introduce you to four people who interpret our times accurately and biblically. Ann Graham Lotz is a discerner of our times and a gifted Bible teacher.
I believe if I live out my natural lifetime, I will live to see the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. I believe that we're living in the last generation before he comes back. And I base that not on my feelings, not on my hopes, so I base it on the signs and what I see going on in our world today.
Amir Sarfati returns to us this year from Israel.
And I believe the Spirit is telling the bride, get ready. And before everything comes to pass, and the Lord is coming to take his bride, soon and very soon, we are going to see the King.
Dr. Mark Hitchcock is a longtime friend and top Bible prophecy teacher favored by this ministry.
God has given us a panorama of what's coming in the future. And God has also set forth for us some of the signs or the things we can look for as we approach the end times. And the Bible tells us that there are discernible signs of the times that are going to portend the Lord's coming.
I have worked with White House correspondent Bill Koenig since since 2002, I can verify that his analysis of our times is the best.
We must remember that 27%, 28% of our Bible is Bible prophecy, and we are blessed to be living at the most important time in Bible prophecy history.
See our website for hotel information, olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org. We begin at 9 a.m. and run until 5 p.m. Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. There's no cost or registration. Hope to see you on Saturday, October 15th. For more information, call us 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. This is Jan Markell. Many Christian leaders avoid the topics of our day, but here on this program, we hit them head on. The times demand we address the hard issues and bring a biblical viewpoint into focus. Thanks for joining us.
My name is Michelle Bachman. I had a sense that the departments that were coming to present information to us before the committee were perhaps in some sense sanitizing some of the information, and perhaps we weren't getting the whole story as members of Congress. Because one thing I have learned being in government is that bureaucracies and individuals in government want to make themselves look good, especially before those who are tasked with holding them accountable. So I had asked one of my aides to find me important people or people who are in the know who could bring me information. Hence walks in Philip Haney. One of my aides brought Philip Haney to me and said, "Philip has a very important story to tell you."
Last weekend, Understanding the Times Radio introduced you to former Homeland Security Officer Phil Haney. Phil is back today, bringing us more insight into the infiltration of terrorists into the United States. Once again, Jan Markell.
And welcome back. And we have been talking last week and this week, and you might want to get a couple of CDs of these programs, hand them out to folks who simply need to be enlightened, and give my office a call, and we'd be glad to get those out to you, because conversation last week and this weekend is based on the new book by Phil Haney, See Something, Say Nothing. A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. It has a foreword by Michelle Bachman, which is why I had a great interest in it. I've read it cover to cover. And the book is by Phil Haney. He witnessed the federal government's development and execution of a hands-off policy specifically designed to protect Muslim leaders with known ties to terror. In other words, the protection of the American people was secondary. And we've talked about how it's actually probably covered a couple of administrations that we brought out in the first program. Actually goes back to the 90s. And Eric Barger's been in studio with me both last weekend and this weekend, and I appreciate his expertise on this topic. We wanted to, in the moments that we have left, cover just a couple of issues here. Phil, I had asked you off air to just give perhaps a few comments on the November election that is forthcoming here in America. And we've already made references to Donald Trump. We've already made references to Hillary Clinton. Eric and I have expressed our deep concern about Hillary Clinton's ongoing ties, which will continue to be ongoing, to the Muslim Brotherhood, through Huma Abedin and other sources. You talked in a previous segment about the Benghazi and how that had ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, had ties to Al-Qaeda, just plain had terror ties. And that's an angle that really hasn't come out in a lot of reporting, even by the conservative news media. So give us your thoughts on the forthcoming November election, the candidates, etc.
Well, as believers, we're called on to use discernment and wisdom and knowledge, and have an understanding of the times. We're supposed to redeem the times. That means buy them back, use them effectively, for the days are evil. In Acts, it says that in times past, God winked at this ignorance, but now commands men everywhere to repent, meaning that we're not authorized, according to the calling that we've received as followers of the Messiah, to languish in ignorance. It also says in Proverbs that wisdom pulls down strong towers. The strongholds of the threat that we face are designed for conventional artillery barrages, if you will, but a well-placed piece of wisdom will bring down the whole tower. And here is my suggestion on how to evaluate the candidates in the upcoming election. For me, it's really quite simple. Who is the most likely candidate to stand up and defend the values of the Constitution? I believe that those precedents have already been set in the careers and the lives of the two individuals. I don't even necessarily refer to Republicans or the Democrats. I call them the allies and the adversaries. Who is most likely to be an ally of the constitutional principles that this country was founded on? And who is most likely to be an adversary to the principles that our country was founded on? And that's how I approach it. And so for me, using that standard of judgment, because we're not electing a church board, we're electing representatives of a constitutional republic. And if that's the nature of our government, then it should be a pretty easy decision on who to vote for if you use that standard of judgment. Who is most likely to stand up for the values represented in the Constitution?
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. I said going out of the last segment that my hunch is a lot of listeners are sort of feeling helpless. I think there could be some fear. We often elect officials that we think are going to be the protector of America and Americans. As a matter of fact, that's actually their number one duty. And then we learn that there's such corruption and such seems to be an affinity for the enemy that we're really not being protected as we thought. That's probably not new news to some people. So you have some pointers as to what people can actually do who are listening, who may feel helpless, feel even frightened right now. I think you need to talk to them about that.
Well, I have 4 points that I've been emphasizing since I started speaking in public. The book is a story about America. It's America's story. It's written from the perspective of a law enforcement officer who took a vow to protect our country from threat, both foreign and domestic. And here are my 4 points that I would like to encourage everyone to do. They're not hard to do. And if we all do them within the community of faith, it will create a gravitational force that will help push the book to number one bestseller. And why do I say that? Am I emphasizing sales and profits? No. What I'm emphasizing is what I mentioned earlier, to address the subject, to gain wisdom, insight, and understanding, and then be armed with the armor of God and find the courage and the honesty to address the threat that we face. And here are the 4 steps. The first step, like in any campaign, you have to vote in order for the campaign to be successful. The way to vote in this campaign is to buy the book and read it. The second one is to share your thoughts with your friends on your social media, whatever it is, Facebook, tweet, Twitter, email, any and all of the above. Going back for a moment to the first point, when you read it, really try to find a point of contact in this story that you can really identify with. I call it mastering the subject. For every person, it's like a buffet. Nobody's plate looks quite the same, but the choices are the same for everyone. Find a point of contact in the story that you really relate to. Share that with your friends on social media. The third one is to write a review on Amazon, for example, to share your thoughts on the website where the book is sold with the people in America and the world. And the fourth one, perhaps the most important of all, share your concerns with Congress. A letter is better than a phone call, but a phone call is a whole lot better than nothing at all. And listeners may or may not know that when a trend is discerned within a representative in D.C., it only takes 10 or 15 people. It doesn't take hundreds or thousands. It only takes a few. So if people across the country in different states call their representatives, and they start getting calls coming in that are concerned about the nature of the threat we face, and that it's high time that they should take action. Believe me, they will hear it. And then as far as individuals, as people of faith, the natural reaction to this story, and I've seen it hundreds and hundreds of times when I speak in public, is usually to be afraid or to be angry. But according to the scriptures, perfect love casts out fear, and that we're not called to fear, but to courage, just like Joshua standing on the plains of Jericho. We have angels on our side. The Lord really is involved in history, and he will valiantly defend those who stand up for the truth. The other one is the anger. According to the Bible, the righteousness of God is not accomplished through the wrath of men, through anger. We're not actually authorized, according to the covenant that we live under, to respond to the nature of the threat with either fear or anger. But if that's the case, then what do we have left? What we have left is the Holy Spirit. And now we come to terms with why we have the Holy Spirit in the first place. The Holy Spirit is what brings to remembrance all that He has taught us during our life. It is also what leads us and guides us into all truth, and it is also what shows us things to come. Those three components of the Holy Spirit, past, present, and future, are the very nature of God Himself, because His name, Yahweh, is derived from the Hebrew verb to be. Not only is it past, present, and in future, but it also implies existence itself. So the very nature of God, we are endowed with it if we have the gift of the Holy Spirit. He doesn't give us discernment and show us things to come for no reason. He gives us discernment and shows us things to come so that we can be equipped and prepared. And He also gives it to us so that we won't succumb to fear or anger. Because nothing that is eternal in value will be accomplished if we do it out of fear or out of anger. So speaking from the side of faith, that's what I would recommend to my brothers and sisters in the audience. Don't be afraid.
I'm going to recommend one more thing, Phil, and that is that my audience actually pray for you, because I think there might be a target on you.
There's definitely a target, so to speak, on his back. We hope not a literal one, but the media will do anything they can to play this down. We're not going to hear these things from CNN and the others. That's the point. And I think we need to continue to tell others these truths. I think we need to speak factually and to blow the whistle. And the more people that do it, the better. Mm-hmm. But I think as we do it, we want to be careful to refrain from just using the common, well, it's the left. We say that, but we give reasons in the process of it. Let's be documented. Phil was a consummate insider, if you will. I mean, he was on the inside, though a patriot following the Constitution. He saw these things. He has laid it out in such a way that his book could be a valuable resource for a long, long time, and a reminder of what happens when we have leadership who are bent only on doing their will instead of the will of the people, and especially the will as presented in the Constitution. So use the facts and documentation, and do your very best not to be wild-eyed as you talk to others about these things. And these are so disturbing, the things we've talked about this week and last week, so distressing to hear it from the inside. Several times during this conversation, Jan, I've heard myself in my mind say that I knew that, I understood that. Mm-hmm. That helps to validate what I believed was going on, but we're hearing that it was going on the inside. So be vocal. And that's something I tell people a lot about any of these issues. Be vocal. If I was going to put a spiritual bow on this thing, I would tell you that so many of you are just so tired, all you want to do is just get to the weekend. And folks, it is the weekend, but we still have to face the truth that this stuff is happening around us. And apathy and complacency are not going to fix it. We need men of valor, women of valor, teenagers of valor to stand up and tell the truth. In Daniel 3, we see the three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were told to bow down and to worship Nebuchadnezzar's golden statue, basically call a man God. They wouldn't do it. In Daniel 6, Daniel himself was intimidated and threatened. And when he refused to pray to a human false god, we know what happened. He was thrown in the lion's den. We may face some of these same awful scenarios, not necessarily lion's dens and execution, but will we stand for the truth? And I think, as I said a few weeks ago when we did the program on my DVD, Preparing for Perilous Times, mm-hmm. I think it is important, it's incumbent upon us to prepare ourselves now. Because as we see in Daniel's day and in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's time, those were types and shadows of Antichrist. And Antichrist is somewhere up ahead of us, and we see the world going headlong that direction. I think we have to decide now, while we have peace and while we're not being forced or threatened, we have to decide when push comes to shove, when I'm asked to do something that I just cannot live with, that I stand on God's side and let the chips fall where they may. If we don't decide to look into our our hearts and minds and make that decision now when the time comes, I fear that a lot of us will fail and fall and try to obfuscate and skate around the issue and try to get out of it somehow rather than come forth with the truth. In our distracted times, many of us have become weak and spiritually lazy, and it's something we've covered a lot, and the idea of self and the narcissism of our culture. All those things, that's not what God wants for us. He wants us to stand strong, and that's the encouragement I have. If you stand strong, there's a great reward ahead for the church, for the Christian, for the individual who stands strong and doesn't give in.
Well, let me clarify again. Olive Tree Ministries is not carrying this book at this time, but you can find it at WND.com, Amazon.com. Call your local bookstore. They may have See Something, Say Nothing. A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad by Phil Haney. It has a forward by Michelle Bachman. You might find it perhaps at Barnes & Noble, a secular bookstore. I'm not sure about Christian. Phil, do you know if it'd be in a Christian bookstore or not?
I don't know if it's on the shelves, but it is on ChristianBooks.com.
ChristianBook.com. Okay, so a lot of online options for sure. Phil Haney, again, God bless you, my friend. Thank you for what you've done. We appreciate you so much, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
All right. Goodbye now.
Bye-bye.
Understanding the Times Radio is now offering CD recordings containing both Part 1 and Part 2 of our current two-week series with DHS whistleblower Phil Haney. To order both broadcasts with Phil Haney, just phone 763-559-4444. Up next on Understanding the Times Radio, Jan and Eric discuss the recent Orlando mass shootings as it relates to our two-week program series with Phil Haney. The summer months are great for travel and getting away. Remember, this program can be found online, around the clock, through our website or from oneplace.com. You never have to miss a single program as you travel and spend time away from home this summer. While you're visiting olivetreeviews.org, check out all the details for our next conference set for October 15. The Bible tells us to work while it is day, for the night is coming when no man can work. We must not be afraid of the conditions in our world. God has told us to be prepared and to pray. Every weekend, we bring you programming to help you understand our times and to be prepared. Will you continue to help us keep this message on the radio and on the World Wide Web? We need your financial support during the lean months of summer. Please write with your gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. Your contribution to this ministry would mean a lot at this time. Coming up, mass murder in Orlando. Jen and Eric have a perspective. That's next. Please stay with us.
Recently, we made you aware of the 100-plus-year agenda to take America down and replace democracy with Marxism. Curtis Bauer spent 2 weeks on air warning us through his video, Agenda 2, Masters of Deceit, that there is indeed a sinister agenda at play. We're now offering that DVD for a tax-deductible gift of $25 or more if you ask for it and live in the U.S. You can request the DVD with a donation online at olivetreeviews.org or write us, Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. Call us at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Be a part of a ministry that talks about today with an eye on tomorrow and support our outreach airing in over 800 radio markets across North America.
Understanding the Times, where we link today with tomorrow.
Every day that Barack Obama delays and doesn't treat it seriously is a day that makes it worse down the road.
You know, you talk about the ideology. We can't change the ideology. We can take out some bad guys, but we can't change their
mindset.
That's
an argument. Yeah, that's an argument that said you can't fight Nazism. You can't fight communism. Of course you can. And when these people are using their ideology to attack us, the response is very clear.
It happened a few weeks ago in Orlando, Florida. The worst mass shooting in American history. For the past 2 weeks, Phil Haney has been with us describing how homegrown terrorists can be so successful in killing Americans. With some reaction now, Jan and Eric. Here again, Jan Markell.
And we are back, and let me just quickly say here that our segments with Phil Haney had to be pre-recorded, obviously with his new book. He's extremely busy in light of our times as well. So I wanted to slip in some comments here, and that I still have Eric Barger in studio. And the Orlando tragedy happened after we had signed off with Phil Haney. I also wanted to reread the email that a prominent pastor sent me several weeks ago. I read it on air back then. I cannot name him. He had a conversation with the Authority on National Security, and that would be Frank Gaffney of the Center for Security Policy. And this pastor sent an email to me and two or three others stating that on two occasions, he said, I had some time with Frank Gaffney. The things he shared publicly were gripping, but privately those things turned almost terrifying. He is absolutely convinced that from his sources, all chatter indicates that many cities, this pastor actually names them, are the key targets of indigenous cells. He said that they have orders to take their own neighborhoods first and from there connect the neighborhoods by expansion. The effort cannot be successfully resisted as there are not enough police, military, citizen firepower, etc. Then the pastor goes on to say he said that starting by spring onward, there will be increasing waves of attacks from what will look like lone wolves, but these are the opening moments of the indigenous cells as they escalate the plan. ISIS has successfully tapped into the disgruntled of America. And then this pastor says, when I asked Mr. Gaffney what we can do, he just looked at me and said, I have exhausted that question. Closes the email with, be as ready as you can, commit your souls to him, and manage your fear with courage. Now, keep in mind, Ramadan runs from June 6th to July 6th, and Islamic leaders have called for attacks during that time. Leaders call for attacks against civilians and specifically attacks against homosexuals, which obviously happened here very recently. And I don't read or say any of this to scare my listening audience, but rather to prepare your hearts for perilous times. Eric Barger remains in studio with me. Eric, your thoughts to what I've just read and what's happened?
Well, all we can do is hope that folks have their ears open and realize that we are in a fight for our life as far as America goes, and individually, of course, too. But there are souls hanging in the balance here. We can't lose sight of the mission that we're here to fulfill, and that's to preach the gospel, be a representative for God here through Jesus Christ. So that's got to stay in there, too. And remember, nobody can take us out until God is ready to take us
home.
And if we keep that in the forefront of our mind, that will begin to quell the fear, and that will begin to really fight against the enemy as he tries to plant fear and all kinds of other negatives in our hearts and minds.
Well, obviously, Mr. Haney has been interviewed extensively since the Orlando disaster now of many days ago now. In an interview, actually, on WorldNet Daily, Phil Haney came out and said that he discovered that a case that he developed might have prevented the attack if it had not been shut down by his agency and Hillary Clinton's State Department. And then he goes on to say that the mosque where the Orlando killer, Omar Mateen, worshipped several times a week also had a tie to the San Bernardino Mosque. Phil Haney noted that the FBI twice had Mateen on its radar, but closed down the investigations both times. And Eric, closed down the investigations both times, even though the killer's work associates and ex-wife said something. Now, here again, say something or see something, say nothing, as Phil Haney said in our programming that we've aired now for two weekends. See something, say nothing. Sounds like it played itself out once again.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And in this case, I think we need to be vigilant, and we need to, if we see something, we need to tell law enforcement. We need to be vocal about it. We need to let folks know what we have seen. That is, those who are in control, and hope that we can actually get through to them. But we do know from interviewing interviewing Phil Haney that, according to his records, in many, many instances, the records that he worked on, the research that they did in Homeland Security, he was told to alter and then scrub the material. So who knows how many of these swords, such as Mateen, are out there. And again, this is not to instill fear, just to point out our government needs to step up, stop the political correctness that is going to destroy the country. And we're hearing this over and over and over by conservatives in the media. You know, our ability to spread the gospel here is at stake with political correctness coming after our free speech. We realize that Muslims, if they live here and they're law-abiding and so on, they have the right of free speech as well. We recognize that for all Americans. That's not the issue. The issue is we're on a mission, and we, once again, and I can't get that out of my heart, Jan, we're on a mission here. And we've got to keep our eyes on the prize of why we're here and what we're doing. And this is going to stand in our way eventually, if it isn't already. And the political correctness has allowed things like San Bernardino and Orlando to go on. And we know that law enforcement can't track and trace every single character that's out there. But somebody like Mateen should have been tracked.
Yes, because the case was closed down by the FBI in spite of the fact that, according to the FBI, Mateen had links to Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and Islamic State, that Mateen's father had openly expressed support for the Taliban, that despite those links to terror organizations, Omar Mateen was allowed to work as a security guard at a local courthouse, and in spite of the fact that he once declared that he hoped to be a martyr someday, and the FBI knew all about this. So my conclusion is, when you combine radical political correctness with extreme government incompetence and the dramatic growth of radical Islam inside America, you create an environment which is absolutely primed for disaster. And I'm going to say it right up front, Eric, the left does not want you safe. The left does not want Americans safe.
Well, you notice the first thing that happened that very day that this attack went on, the very first thing was it was all about guns.
Yes.
It wasn't about radical Islam. It wasn't about the gunners. It wasn't about those who were pulling the trigger. It was about the inanimate object, the guns. Jan, if you can remember what you just said, you should read that again to folks. When you combine radical political correctness, that was so well said, because that really sums it up all in just one sentence. Can you kind of bring those thoughts back again?
I have it in my notes. When you combine radical political correctness with extreme government incompetence and the dramatic growth of radical Islam inside of America, you create an environment which is absolutely primed for disaster. Another thing that happened is, here again, Eric, we have these technology giants. In Facebook removed Pamela Geller's Stop the Islamization of America page on the day of the Orlando terrorist attack because it offends Muslims, according to Facebook. Pamela Geller, American heroine for her fight against radical Islam inside America.
I mean, let's see Facebook and Twitter and others take pages down because you and I are offended, or because our listeners would be offended by the things that are being taught out there, by the salaciousness of some of the pages and some of the videos on YouTube and the language and all that. We could be offended as well, but it seems like we're bending over backwards. And we've done this since 9/11. It was stunning to me that after 9/11, this became the modus operandi around us inside the media and our government.
Eric, I'm going to play a real short soundbite and have you explain what's going on here, at least I think, because in many cases, the Islamic community will come out and express deep sympathy and regret. And let's just play that short bite.
My name is Naeem Beg, and I'm president of Islamic Circle of North America. On behalf of the Islamic Circle of North America, we join our fellow Americans in condemning this act of violence. We offer our condolence to the families for their great loss from this tragic event. We strongly denounce any act of killing, regardless of motives and faith of the killer. This is the holy month of Ramadan. We will be making special prayers for the victims and their families. May God give the family strength to bear this loss. Amen.
Now, you feel that may not be totally sincere. Why do you say that?
Well, I can't read that man's heart or any of the other spokesmen that we've heard in the media over the last several days since the Orlando attack. But the posturing that goes on, and that really began the day of the attacks by Islamic leaders, when that massacre took place, I think it was very well staged and planned what was said. Unless a person actually understands what's happening from the viewpoint of being an Islamic, you have to understand that Kitman and Taqiyya are at play here. And some listeners have heard those terms, others don't know what we're talking about. Kitman, inside of Muslim doctrine, is using half-truths to mislead or camouflage intentions. Taqiyya is a complete deception that would be lying to subvert and deceive unbelievers. Basically to say, look here at my left hand up in the air, but don't watch my right hand behind my back. They still hold the same views they did, but they, of course, come out with the idea that they send condolences and so on. And this is what their public face has to be if the plan, which is to Islamicize America, can take place. And, you know, the Quran justifies this kind of thing. This isn't just them cooking up this idea. This is long seated in Islam. Surah chapter 4, a surah is a chapter in the Quran, and Surah 4, 142, and many other verses give them the right to lie to the infidel. And this principle is utilized in Sharia courts. And devout Muslims know this and use it worldwide. And you know, we can go back in history and see how Muhammad himself used it. He signed a peace treaty with the leaders of Mecca in 628. And he talked peace with them just long enough to build an army big enough that he knew could overrun Mecca. And he did so the very next year in 629. And so this is the way it's done. Okay. Islam's unchangeable law is there'll be no peace until Islam prevails. And it doesn't matter how that victory is attained.
I'm going to encourage you folks to get a product that we carry. It's actually Eric Barger's Preparing for Perilous Times DVD. Will You Be Victors or Victims? Preparing for Perilous Times. We have it in our store, olivetreeviews.org, views as in viewpoint, olivetreeviews.org, and talks about the perilous times that are coming upon the world, the nation, and perhaps even in our personal lives. How are you going to handle that? Well, we've wanted to kind of sum things up here. Let me go out of the program and out of this two-week series saying this, and I'm just giving you a psalm written by King David. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me, my adversaries and foes, it is they who stumble and fall. Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Understanding the Times Radio is now offering CD recordings containing both Part 1 and Part 2 of our current two-week series with DHS whistleblower Phil Haney. To order both broadcasts with Phil Haney, just phone 763-559-4444. Thank you for joining us for today's Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. This listener-supported broadcast is delivered to you coast-to-coast each weekend. It costs thousands of dollars to bring it to your home. To help us produce and distribute this program, would you consider becoming our financial partner? For a gift of $25 or more, if you ask for it, we'd like to send you Curtis Bauer's new video, Agenda 2, a stunning expose of the crafted Marxist plan to take down America. This DVD is a must-see. It can be yours for a donation of $25 or more. To take advantage of this offer, you must live in the United States. Please send your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. You can also support this ministry at olivetreeviews.org or phone 763-559-4444. 24 hours a day. Catch us online at olivetreeviews.org for daily updates on our world with a biblical worldview. We look forward to hearing from you very soon. In the meantime, we deeply appreciate your prayer support. Jen returns again next week with another program to help you understand the times.